This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Thanks for joining us. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour. Also continue our previews of the Cleveland Browns. We've got the Steelers coming up tomorrow. So that'll wrap up the AFC North. We do a division a week, kids. And by the way, if you miss any of them, our interviews, you can go to podcastarena.com, Wake Up Call. You can find us all there. All right. So two coaches in the National Football League, and both of them made a little bit of news this week. Not huge news, but news nevertheless. Talked about this one yesterday, in which Ron Rivera sort of, he kind of miscalculated a little bit. Said he got his foot stuck in his mouth. Talking about Eric Bieniemy. Now, Eric Bieniemy is intense in practices, and this is all brand new to the Washington Commanders because they had 3 years of Scott Turner, and he didn't act like that. And he wasn't as intense. Whereas the Kansas City Chiefs had a lot of years with Eric Bieniemy, and they had success, and the offense was fantastic, and even the combined efforts between him, Andy Reid, and of course having Patrick Mahomes led to Super Bowl appearances, 5 straight AFC championship games, all hosting those at Arrowhead Stadium. So you can put up with a little bit of intensity from your head for your assistant coach in practice if you know in the end you're getting some goods. But in Washington, they don't know what the end result's going to be. They haven't been very good, and this is all brand new. So Ron Rivera, for whatever reason, went to the media to say that some of the players were concerned about Bieniemy's coaching style. Now, I said this yesterday. I have no idea why he did this. I have no idea why he brought this to the media to run headlines that he ended up saying were not the headlines he intended. Well, you got to be smarter than that, because that's exactly what the world we live in right now. You know, if you get some information on a tough head coach, they're going to spin the headline to get as many clicks to the article as they possibly can. So it was absolute mistake on Ron Rivera's part. If there is an issue, now Rivera says, oh, the players don't really have an issue. I encouraged them to talk to Bieniemy and everything was great. Well, that is something you didn't have to tell the media. You could have done all of this behind closed doors. You could have done this all with a meeting and say to the players, he's not changing his style, but if you have a problem with it, you can go talk to him and you guys can air out these differences, but we're all going to keep this in-house, right? So instead, what happened was Rivera speaks about this, and then you got players from Kansas City, former players from Kansas City or current Chiefs, kind of speaking out through social media that this is a benefit to you guys. Like, you guys will see the results of this if you just listen to him, and he really does have your back. Tyreek Hill is a big fan of Eric Bieniemy. A couple of Kansas City Chiefs went out and reached and said, hey, you know what? Yeah, Eric Bieniemy is great. You guys will totally benefit from this. It backfired a little bit on Ron Rivera because Bieniemy ended up looking pretty good in this because he did two things. One, he got support from former players, but two, he reiterated, I'm not changing. This is who I am. This is how I'm going to coach this team. And you know what? He had every right to say, and you know what? They haven't done anything in the last 3 years too. I'm not going to throw another coach under the bus like Sean Payton, but I'm here to tell you they didn't do a thing and I'm trying to get them to be better. So Rivera was in a pickle. So yesterday he sort of apologized. So yeah, I kind of had a foot in my mouth. I'm sorry, I put my foot in the mouth. I did not want to portray the players as soft or Bieniemy as too tough. Like, I didn't want to come across. Well, that's exactly what he did, right? That's exactly what he did. Now, I'm not here to say that everyone needs to be, to know how to work the media. Sometimes you say things you think are going to go one way and they don't. And in the end, he ends up coming back the next day going, man, I'm really sorry about that. I didn't mean to do that. There's another coach that's making some news, and that is Mike Vrabel. He's the head coach of the Tennessee Titans. On Saturday, they're going to be in Chicago for a preseason game against the Bears. And Mike Vrabel is not going to be the head coach. In fact, Mike Vrabel is going to coach the defensive line. He's going to be an assistant coach on the staff of Terrell Williams. Terrell Williams is an assistant coach, works the defensive line. He's going to get an opportunity to be the head coach of the Tennessee Titans. Why? Well, there are a lack of black head coaches in the NFL, and Vrabel knows this. And the opportunities don't seem to be there. And sometimes, like Vrabel was saying, I want to give guys on my staff an opportunity to show what they can do. Now, it's a preseason game. It's not a regular season game, but it gives an assistant coach some really good experience. Now, this has been a big story in Nashville because everybody likes Mike Vrabel anyway, and this has allowed him to be more endearing to the public because he is saying, look, something is wrong with the hierarchy of this league, and I'm going to try to help break that if I possibly can. And Terrell Williams will be coaching the preseason game. I don't know if Vrabel is going to do this for the other two preseason games where he's going to find assistant coaches on his staff and let them coach it. But the players are pretty excited about it. Obviously, Terrell Williams gets an opportunity to be the head guy for the week leading up to the game, be able to call the way he'll call from the booth, et cetera, and work with the other assistants. It's going to give him some valuable experience. I kind of like this idea. I think this is the kind of stuff. I don't want to make a mockery of preseason games. Like I've said many times, if coaches want 10, they can have 10. If they want one, they can have one. I don't care. It's not my. I'm not prepping a team for the NFL, but it really goes to show you that, hey, listen, there's some of these coaches are looking at these opportunities not just for players to try to make a team, but for coaches to be better coaches and for coaches to enhance their resume. And Terrell Williams has been, you know, a former player. He's been an assistant coach. You know, he's close to 50 years old, and he's 49. He hasn't had a chance to be heavily interviewed for any opportunities, and this might open the door. So again, just two NFL coaches kind of going about their business this week in different directions. Now, as I mentioned in hour number one, I was talking about the Hard Knocks episode with the Jets and how there's just this incredible optimism, obviously, as you would expect with Aaron Rodgers there, and just how many of the players are just so happy to have a leader and a veteran and a Hall of Famer on the team. And it's trickling down, at least in the first episode, to guys that want to live up to that standard, right? To live up to that play. Robert Saleh is now in charge of a team that has a Super Bowl aspiration by one guy. One guy landing there, they have elevated themselves from a team that's got some really good young players and a bright future to a team that should be competitive for the Super Bowl. Think about how quick that is for a coach when you take over a program or team, I should say. I shouldn't call it program because Matt Rhule called it program and we lambasted him for that. When you take over a team that is in the dumps because they need a new head coach, and you come in and you're building it, right? So you're going to draft the right guys. You're going to build this team. It's your first time being a head coach. So you're going to take the next couple of years to try to learn the ropes and then also build a team. There's a little progression here. Dan Campbell got it with the Lions, right? Year one wasn't as good, but he's learning his team, getting acclimated to being a head coach. What happened in year two? They're 1-6. Everyone's like, okay. They were all fired up after Hard Knocks, but 1-6. They go 9-8. They barely miss out on the playoffs. They start seeing the development. Now, Dan Campbell, in year number three, he's going into the season as a team that should be competitive in the NFC to win the NFC, and the NFL likes their story so much, they're in the kickoff game against Kansas City on September 7th. Robert Saleh, by one acquisition, has turned a group of young potential into a Super Bowl-level team, to a team that should be around the conversation when we talk about AFC teams that should be going to Super Bowl 58. And it is so open. I look at Cincinnati, for example. We talked about the Bengals, how good they were. What if this calf strain, what if they're overly conservative and Burrow is out for four games, and they go 1-3? Burrow is able to get them back in the picture. Of course he can. But this AFC is tough. And I would not want to be the Bengals, as well as they play on the road in the postseason, to keep rolling that dice every single year. Like Mike Petralia said yesterday, they are tired of going on the road playing playoff games, right? They are tired of it. You want that road to the Super Bowl to go through Cincinnati. But if you miss out, you can get off to a bad start and recover, but how much are you going to recover in the larger picture? We're not talking about missing the playoffs, none of that. We're talking about where are you going for the divisional round? Where are you going for the AFC championship game? If it's not in your city, why isn't it in your city? And last year, You can point to an entire preseason that was missed by Burrow recovering from the appendectomy surgery. Then the slow start that led to a rather mediocre performances that led them to 4-4 before they turned it on. And they were kept out of hosting the Buffalo Bills, and they were kept out of hosting the Kansas City Chiefs. So you're talking about, I mean, we're talking about an AFC that is on a level of historic on how good this conference is. I can't remember the last time the AFC was this good. I can't. I mean, this is an AFC that had Marino, that had Kelly, that had Elway, it rolling along. And I don't remember it being as loaded as it is now.
I don't think it ever has been.
I don't think it ever has been.
Yeah,
I agree.
I mean, you really like sit back and look at it. I mean, there's what you say, like out of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league right now, 8 of them are probably in the AFC.
I would agree. Yeah. 8 of them are probably in the AFC.
I mean, I'm stretching it a little bit because I'm trying to think, like, who are the top quarterbacks in the NFC?
You can, this is a little bit of a stretch because I'll put the Titans in this group. It's a little bit of a stretch because the Titans are expected to rebound if Tannehill is healthy. But you can find it, you can find at least two teams that are playoff, that should be playoff bound in every division.
Yeah.
In every division. If you want to stretch it a little bit with the Titans. If you don't want to, that's fine.
Then you got your 7.
But there you go. Right. And then there's even more when you talk about the Jets being a third team in there. If you want to throw the Steelers, you know, kind of hovering last year, maybe hovering this year.
In the AFC West, yeah, I mean, you can make an argument for all four.
Yeah, you can make an argument for all four.
Maybe not the Raiders.
Maybe not. But seriously, there is, it's so loaded. Don't get off to a slow start. But, I mean, I was just thinking about Robert Saleh. The pressure's on right now. Right now.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb. Thanks for joining us here again on a Throwback Thursday on Sports Map Radio. All right, let's get started. Let's get the good of the day.
You know what the good of the day is?
Yes.
Is that every once in a while you have some fun with Little League.
Yeah.
Right? The Little League World Series. And I mean, for Washington, the team from Washington, it wasn't so much fun because they were getting shellacked.
Okay.
But that provided a fun moment with the head coach of the Pennsylvania team. So in the bottom of the third, he went to the mound to go visit the kids. And the score was 10-3. And he had this little, I'm going to call it a Bull Durham moment at the mound.
All right.
Hey, did I ever tell you the time that my dog ate the rosin bag?
No, but you told us the hot dog story.
Oh, you told us the hot dog story.
Can you stop? No, you can't say hi to your mom.
Hi, Mom.
Stop. Guys, you did a great job, okay?
Nice. That's fun. Can't say hi to Mom.
Yeah.
Stop.
No, you can't say hi to your mom.
Yeah, so he's basically like, what the heck? Well, it's fun.
I'm just, you know, yeah. I mean, they ended up winning the game 16-3, so the game
oh
was well
Oh, my God,
well
they came rallying back? Or
yeah,
no,
they were up 10-3 at that moment.
Oh, okay, so this coach was just, this wasn't the losing coach.
No, this wasn't the losing coach. This was the winning coach. And, yeah, you know, I mean, what do? Now, you go out there and you talk to your team. I think he was changing the pitcher out because the pitcher had thrown 50-plus or around 50 pitches.
Yeah, get him out of there.
Get him out of there, save him for another day. He did his job. And so it was just like, yeah, I have no coaching to do to you guys. You guys are up 10-3.
I got a question. and I'm not trying to be the old grumpy man. I'm not trying to be that guy. But is it really that slow of a sports calendar that ESPN is showing regional coverage? Like, they've been doing this for years. Like,
yeah.
I don't remember anybody caring how teams got to Williamsport. They just started showing it to Williamsport. Now it's like, we're going to show you how they're getting to Williamsport. Like, we're sending TV crews to these places around the country, and we're going to give you regional action.
Here's what I think it is, right? I think it's cheaper for them than to say, hey, let's show you some NFL training footage.
Yeah.
Because the NFL, I mean, I'll tell you this, the NFL Network, I mean, they're living at all the training campsites.
Sure.
Every training campsite is covered. And they're featuring a team a day, and they'll go back and visit a team. I think for ESPN, they're like, okay, you know, we'll just do Little League World Series.
Just show Little League.
It's all day long. I'm looking at it right now. It's on TV right now.
Ratings are good.
Nah, they can't be.
They can't be. It's family and friends. That's and maybe the people in that town or that area.
Yeah. I mean, I had it on. I'll be honest. It was on our television, I think, on Sunday. Because, again, I was just doing stuff around the house. So it was just background. It was white noise. And I just had it on TV. I mean, you know, maybe I helped give a few extra points to him because it was on my television at the time. But I wasn't watching.
Like, again, when I grew up, the only game you watched was the deciding game.
Yeah.
That was it. Like, it was a weekend, was getting close to...
And then didn't you feel good, like, when you got the U.S. championship game? It was like, ooh.
Yeah, maybe that was decent. It was on ABC, and it was a big deal for ABC, but that was it. They just went, here's the Little League championship game. It was just some team from America against some team from Asia, and boom, here we go. And
it was always Asia, too, yeah, wasn't it? It was always China or Taiwan.
Taiwan, they were great.
Yeah.
Couple of times the United States would win, and it would be a huge deal.
It's still weird to me to see that, you know, there's a team from, like, Europe.
Yeah, like, right.
Oh, they
yeah.
play?
Yeah. I know, it's nuts. It's completely nuts.
I mean, I'm looking at the different regions right now, right? So the international teams, I mean, the United States teams are ridiculous, but the international teams, there's the Asia-Pacific. So they're kind of narrowing it down a little bit. Then Australia, Canada, Caribbean, Cuba. So Cuba gets their own team. Europe, Africa, they kind of combine all those together. Japan, Latin America, but there's a Mexico and Panama region.
Right. Okay.
So like four countries get their own.
Yeah.
Five. So Japan too.
It's amazing. Like, I know it's August and we're not quite there yet.
Just the other day, I missed it. I know you did too. I think ESPN did their Ocho. It was August 8th.
That's right. It was Wednesday. Tuesday.
Tuesday. I missed the marble racing, there was any.
That's what we're down to now.
Yeah.
This is the crazy month of summer.
You know, and it's baseball. I think we'd rather watch Little League games than majors.
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, seriously, I don't want to sound like I'm an old man on the kids, but it just doesn't feel like your pursuit of getting to Williamsport as a 12-year-old warrants ESPN coverage.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I 100%
agree
with you.
The two don't weigh on the same scale. Like, I can't imagine people in Meridian, Mississippi, really wondering if it's going to be North Dakota or South Dakota that's going to go to Williamsport. It's good for the kids. They get to be on TV. So.
The Great Lakes region, I'm looking at the game. I mean, do you care if Ohio makes it versus, I don't even know, other schools? I mean, you sit there and it's like, no, I've never even wouldn't know this team. That's not affecting my life at all.
Yeah, that's it.
But we get it all the time.
So, well, good. And, yeah, there's a team in Tennessee that's gone for the third straight year, and everybody's excited for them again, and we've gone down this road a month.
Are they in the – is that the Southeast or is that the – no, it's not the Mountain region.
Mid-East region?
Mid-East region?
I don't know. So, Nolensville. So if you see Nolensville, they're the ones dressed up in Vanderbilt outfits.
Oh, are
they?
Ooh.
They look like Vanderbilt.
No, they're not the Midwest.
That's right. Well, we'll get the bad and the dumb coming up next. That's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Get on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. Hour three, we'll focus more on the Cleveland Browns. Again, there's some things to like, and there's some things that they're worried about. As we continue, it's Wake Up Call.
Up call on the Sports Maps Radio Network alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, we'll continue. By the way, Throwback Thursday is today. It's a going back to the 2008 Summer Olympics. Yep. Michael Phelps winning the gold medal and one of eight gold medals. As what was he taking, the 400 meter individual relay or something like that?
Yeah.
Individual relay is a
he did that by himself.
Can't do that.
That's all him. He all alone.
Is that an oxymoron?
Probably. Yeah.
Is
individual
that what
relay?
Individual relay is an oxymoron? You know what's the biggest oxymoron? I when
Jumbo
I was in
shrimp?
Jumbo Shrimp. When I was in journalism school, journalism class, I should say. They said one of the biggest oxymoron is past. All right, a little technical difficulty there, but we have got the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue on Wake Up Call. Where did we leave off? The bad?
No, we got it. We have the bad. We got to start with the bad. The bad of the day.
We just did the good, and now we're back to the bad. Okay.
The bad, it's devastating. I've been watching all these videos of the wildfires in Maui.
Yeah, what is going on? I was going to ask
you
about that.
I don't know. Have you ever been to Maui?
I've never been to Hawaii in general.
Okay, never been to Hawaii in general. Maui is kind of like, you know, the touristy island to go to. Especially the west side of the island, which just got ravaged by these wildfires. Lahaina, the shopping district in Lahaina, and you'll see lots of photos of it. You'll hear the name Front Street. It's an iconic place for the Hawaiian Islands. It's where you go, like, if you want that touristy, we're going to walk through some shopping areas in some old, it's like old historic buildings, the shopping area. You can see two islands off of the Pacific Ocean. Completely gone. Everything's gone.
It's a wildfire that
It's a wildfire. I don't know how it started.
Yeah, I was going to say, how did it start? Did it come from the forest in the town? Is it a wildfire somebody started a fire in the town?
I don't think they know how it started, or they haven't said anything because they've been more concerned about, you know, what it's done and where the fuel of it was coming from. The fuel was coming from the Category 4 Hurricane Dora, which was well to the south. The hurricane itself wasn't really affecting the Hawaiian Islands except for the wind.
Okay.
And so Maui was experiencing like 60 to 80 mile per hour wind gusts.
So it just spreads
and that's
it all
just,
over.
Yeah, and it just, and it was coming up over the mountain. The west side has always been historically dry. All the Hawaiian Islands on the west side of the islands are always historically dry. It's kind of bizarre. And the norths are always wet.
All right, so here's the other question I've got. Right now they say 36
people
have died.
Yeah.
Again, how do you get such a high level? Can you get, like, once you get one or two, aren't you trying to, like, let everybody get out of here? Like,
you're trying to get everyone out of there.
Get
but,
out of
you
here
know,
as much as you can. Like,
there are some people.
Small fire, but get out.
Yeah, having.
Don't stick around.
Having been in a wildfire myself, having, you know, my community being that, there are some people who are just stubborn and like, no, we won't leave. I mean, they can do mandatory evacuations, but there are people who are like, no, I'm going to defend my house.
It's like that woman in Dante's Peak.
Yeah.
Like, oh, got to go get grandma on the mountain because she doesn't want to leave.
Then there are those who simply just got trapped. Like,
yeah.
There's just not enough time. I remember a company I was working for, my boss, you know, when the wildfires hit San Diego, my boss, the owner of the company, he was like, we got a call at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and we had to be out in 10 minutes. He says they had no clue. They were all sound asleep in their bed. And when they got the phone call at 4 o'clock, the fire department was going up and down the street, blaring horns and saying, everyone get out. He looked at his back window, and he said the fire was already in our backyard.
Oh, geez.
Didn't have time to grab anything. They grabbed clothes. I mean, his wife didn't even get a chance to put shoes on. They were out of the house so fast.
That's awful.
So you hear those stories. You hear the stories like in Maui. People were running and jumping into the ocean.
Sure.
Just to escape it. So it's devastating. And, you know, that town of Lahaina, I mean, it's just historic. The way it looked, it was a perfect beachfront shopping area. All the different trendy restaurants they had, all the art galleries. It was like, you know, the stereotypical waterfront marketplace.
Yeah.
It completely leveled.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about this because I keep seeing it. And it sounds like it's getting worse and worse, and nobody's.
Yeah, I mean, it was like three people or two people, then it became six, and then all of a sudden overnight, it was like, well, 36.
I have no idea. Like, I have no idea how they contain these things. Like, I see them in California, and I go, how do you get this out? Like, how do you do that? You can't put it out. You hope for it to rain, and you just hope to contain it.
Yeah, well,
so
I mean,
it burns itself out.
The only thing they can do, they drop water on it. The other thing that they can do that's proved effective, which is kind of bizarre, is starting a fire of their own, like ahead of the front line, the fire line that's coming towards them, they start a fire there. So that way, when that fire reaches, it has nothing to burn.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen these videos on YouTube of like people trying to escape in cars.
The
anxiety is intense because you know they make it out because the video is posted and it's on the phone in the car. It's like a movie where you know the hero isn't going to die. These are like, they give me anxiety sitting in that car trying to drive around it, not knowing where to go. If you take this turn, it could lead to nothing. It could lead to everything. You just do not know because you have no idea where it is. It's crazy. That is really sad. All right, do we have time for the dumb?
We have a quick time for the dumb. I mean, if you want to talk about it more, you can. But I found it really stupid that nearly 10,000 people, they entered this contest sponsored by Subway.
Right.
And the contest, and I can't believe that, you know, they got 10,000 people to sign up for this. They will legally change their name to Subway.
Oh, jeez.
To get free sandwiches for life.
Oh, come on.
And Subway will pay all the court costs of legally changing your name to Subway. So there's going to be one individual, Tony, by the end of, I think, August, or say by the end of this year. I don't know how long the process takes. But by the end of this year, there will be an individual out there whose name is Subway. And he gets to get free Subway sandwiches for the rest of his life.
That's crazy. And here's the other thing. In 10 years, are you going to be so excited that you did this?
Like, exactly.
Like, in 10 years, you're going to be like, My name is Subway. I've had 4,000 of these sandwiches, and it really wasn't worth it changing my name to Subway.
No. I mean, dude, I think for myself.
Like, hey, Bob. I'm sorry. That's right. It's Subway.
I mean, it could be fair to say that I've had about 100 Subway sandwiches in my time, and I think, you know, I've enjoyed two of them.
Yeah, just after it's like anything. It gets old after. It doesn't matter what you're eating. Like you could have the unlimited pasta bowl pass from Olive Garden, or you can have a lifetime pass to the famous, infamous gold card from McDonald's. Like, you can anything. After doing it over and over again, you can get a little tired of it.
Oh, you definitely will.
Changing your name for this.
Legally changing your name. Not just saying, hey, you start calling me Subway. It's going through the courts and saying, I am now Mr. Subway.
All right.
Mr. Way. My first name is Sub. I don't know.
Sub? Yeah, go Sub with last name Way. That's the way I would do it. All right. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, we are continuing. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. It's the we just did the good, the bad, and the dumb. We are on a throwback Thursday, 2008. Michael Phelps winning an individual medley of one of 8 gold medals in the summer games that year. Kind of captivated the nation. That's our throwback Thursday today. I want to bring up something. I say this. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not very familiar with how deals are worked out and whatnot, and I've never even been in trouble with the law to need a lawyer. But sometimes in this business, you kind of have to be a little bit, you know, a little bit of medical, a little bit of law, because that's how sports goes in. You know, it goes into that world a lot. You talk about strains and tears and joints and things like that, and then players get in trouble with the law, and you end up dropping yourself into that world a little bit. I have to preface that. Some of you may hear this story and go, because you're more familiar with it than I am, like, no, that's about right. But it's not sitting with me. So yesterday, Henry Ruggs in Las Vegas, who played for the Raiders, he was sentenced in that drunk driving accident that happened in November of 2021. It killed a woman and her dog, and it killed her in the worst way I think a person can go, a fireball. Like, she died from thermal injuries. She didn't die from the impact. She died because her car blew up. Her car caught on fire, and she was trapped inside with the dog. He was going 150 miles an hour when he slammed into her car. He was very, very drunk. And yesterday, he got a sentence of 3 to 10 years, and he could be eligible for parole after 3 years.
Yeah, he accepted a plea deal because he saw or that was the deal that was given to him because he went to a psychiatrist.
Is this a normal thing when somebody loses their life in a drunk driving accident? He's not getting at least 15? He could be back out in 3? Like, I preface all of this by saying, yeah, maybe that's normal. I mean, that's just the way it goes. He was facing 3 to 10 years in a Nevada state prison since May. Why just 3? 3 sounds like that's what you'd get if you misfiled your taxes. Right? This sounds like 3 years sounds like something like if you punched a guy in a bar and he hit his head and he was paralyzed. This guy slammed into a car and burned the woman alive. That woman burned alive because of the impact of his Corvette going over 150 miles an hour. I mean, I can't imagine a more horrific thing than being stuck in your car while it's on fire. I mean, we're just kind of talking about the wildfires in Hawaii. I mean, it is enormously painful, right? It's got to be on a level you can't possibly understand. You ever burn yourself on a stove by accident? You ever grab a hot handle? You ever have a flicker of heat hit your skin? And he gets 3 to 10, he could be out in 3 with what? Good behavior? Keep his nose clean? He could be back out on parole? I'm not understanding it. Like, I'm not understanding this. But again, I'm not a lawyer. I know plea deals are much less, all of that stuff, prevents a trial, all that. But goodness gracious, 3 to 10, it just does not seem that it fits the crime. It just doesn't seem like that at all. I mean, is that the normal thing that you get? If you're going 150 down the highway, down the wrong way on a highway, and you kill 2 people, is it just 3 years that we're doing now? Is that it? I mean, my goodness. I mean, you hear things like, I tell my kids all the time, like, we live in a neighborhood with a lot of children. And sometimes these children, they see a ball, they run across the street, right? So in order to get out of our housing area, our housing division, you got to go down the road. And I tell my kids all the time, you are crawling through these streets until you get to the stop sign. When you get to the stop sign, and you get on the main road, and you're crawling. Because if you hit any of these kids, your life is over. Over. Like, I'm thinking, like, if you accidentally hit a kid that's chasing a ball across the street and you're not drunk, you just don't react in time, your life is over. This guy was drunk. He was at a Topgolf. He was drinking. It is in the, and they showed the receipt. The receipt was huge with beverages. He was way over the legal limit. Goes 154 miles an hour down a Las Vegas street, slams into another car. The impact of the car is so great, it causes the other car to explode and burn the woman alive, burn a woman and a dog alive. And his life can resume in 3 years. He can be on just parole in 3 years. After all of that, I'm not understanding this. I'm not understanding this. Somebody's got a better explanation, feel free to hit me up on Twitter with it. Again, if you're a lawyer, I would love it. Again, I'm willing to go, okay, I got this wrong, or I got this emotion wrong. And it was just the raw emotion of it. Just seems like 3 years. Again, I stole these Kleenexes and toothpaste from the local pharmacy. Not killing a woman by going 154 miles an hour after drinking all night.
Creating a fireball.
Fireball.
No, it is shocking, but that was the thing.
You know?
That was the thing that I saw was that, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I guess he was suffering from PTSD.
Got it.
So part of the plea deal was for him to see a psychiatrist to talk through it all. I mean, it is devastating to him, but yeah, it is seems kind of weird that 3 to 10 years. And then I can't help but play this card, but I think about it. It's like, okay, well, you and I get the same.
I'm with you. I'm with you. But at the same time, the Raiders cut ties with him. He's not a Raider. He's not going back to the Raiders.
No, because
you know what I mean? So this, you know how we do this with athletes? We just go, with athletes, we go, if you're not useful to me, I don't care what happens to you. And so it's not like they're like, man, in 3 years, he'll be able to be on the Raiders. We have a good chance of winning the Super Bowl. It's like, no, he's done. He's not a football player anymore. So I don't know about that. But I also wonder, was he able to buy really great defense lawyers that knew the system really well and played this out? So, what about the family here? Like, is anybody considering this was a young woman. This was a young gal who was minding her own business. She was 23 years old. She didn't do anything wrong. She wasn't in the car with him. She was just on her way. She worked at the Paris Casino.
Yep.
That was it. She had an overnight shift. She just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. And Henry Ruggs, being an irresponsible football player, got blasted at a Topgolf and decided it was time to do Gran Turismo 3 on the streets of Las Vegas. And plowed into her. And then just the impact alone didn't kill her. The fireball killed her. The fire in the car killed her. I just imagine the horror of that.
Yeah.
Just the horror of that. Like, you can't get out. It's the temperature is 1,000 degrees. You're being consumed by flames, not smoke, flames. And it's burning your skin. It's burning your body. It's boiling your blood. 3 years. 3 years he could be out on parole. I know there's circumstances here, and the lawyers give you the best defense possible, but this is just, I don't know, something that's just not, I can't process the two, right? I don't think you should go to jail for life. It wasn't first degree murder, right? He didn't plan it, plot it, execute it. It is manslaughter, but it's 3 years. Again, I mean, unbelievable. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. We'll have the Cleveland Browns, more on them coming up in hour number three. I got a story that just popped up. It just came on while we were on the show. So I'm giving myself a little bit of a breather to kind of check it out. And it's another Phil Mickelson gambling story. Have you seen this pop up on the wire?
The one with the horses?
Yeah, no. Well,
it's Alan Shipnick.
It's a book that says Mickelson bet more than $1 billion over 3 decades.
I think that might be something that Alan Shipnick recently undisclosed, I guess.
That might have been. And also, I know Billy Walters is writing a book, The Notorious Gambler, that had connections with Mickelson. So I don't know if it's his book or Shipnick's book. But $1 billion. I got to go and look at this to see exactly how they come up with that number.
How they come up with $1 billion.
How does Phil Mickelson, who hasn't made $1 billion in his career, is close because he says he's worth $800 million. How in over 3 decades did he have $1 billion in disposable income to gamble on sports? Was he winning a lot and just used that money? Does the IRS want to talk to him?
Maybe.
To find out what the hell is going on, if this is true? Or was it a guy going, I don't know. How much do you think he bet over 3 decades? I don't know. $1 billion? Okay. $1 billion. Why not? It's like when your kid goes, I want $1 trillion. Okay. It's not a number, but whatever. Maybe that's what this is. All right. We'll continue. Hour 3 up next as we continue with the Wake Up Call.